weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Trent Ford, state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute.
Today, we are joined by Phil Klotzbach to talk about the upcoming hurricane season. Phil Klotzbach is a research scientist for the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University. Welcome, Phil. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, Phil. So, you know, I know we're already part of the way through hurricane season, but what is the overall forecast for hurricane activity in the Atlantic and then, of course, the Gulf for the rest of the season?
Yeah, so we did forecast an above normal hurricane season. We put out our final outlook for this season on the 6th of August. And so while hurricane season officially starts June 1st, it really doesn't ramp up until August historically. We're getting close to kind of the peak of the hurricane season right now. The climatological or average peak of season is on September 10th, so just a little bit more than a week away. So our forecast is for an above normal season, a total of 16 named storms. A named storm is a tropical storm or hurricane, so any system named by the National Hurricane Center. Of those 16, 8 becoming hurricanes, and of those 8, 3 becoming major Category 3, 4, 5 hurricanes. We've already had 6 storms this year. Our last storm was Fernand, and we've had one major hurricane, that was Hurricane Erin, which actually was a Category 5 hurricane, so the highest category on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale. That Saffir-Simpson scale ranges from 1, which are low-end hurricanes, all the way up to 5, which are the strongest hurricanes.
And Phil, you talked a little bit about this, but you defined hurricane season as peaking around September 10th. With climate change, is hurricane season changing at all?
Yeah, so you know we've done a lot of work looking into this, and so you know every hurricane season is certainly different. So while the season peaks historically September 10th, you know each year can be very different. For example, 2024 last year we had the earliest Category 5 on record. It was a very, very busy early season. Then we went through kind of when the season normally peaks. It was extremely quiet, and then we finished with a very, very busy end to the season, and unfortunately very damaging end to the season with both Helene and Milton. Now, if we look longer term and kind of look at trends in hurricane seasons, we do see that we are tending to get some weak, short-lived storms prior to kind of the official start date. So the official start date is June 1st. We are getting some weak, short-lived storms during the middle to later part of May. Most of those storms form in the Western Atlantic, and that may be somewhat due to just the fact that we have warmer ocean waters, and warmer oceans provide more fuel for those storms. We haven't had a hurricane during May since 1970, so these storms that are forming early tend to be fairly weak. On the other side, looking at the late season side of things, you know, we've had some very busy late seasons, most notably with 2020, where we had 5 major hurricanes in October and November. But overall, we aren't really seeing much of a trend, you know, say going beyond November 30th. So June 1st to November 30th really tends to encapsulate the season. And really, most storm activity occurs just during the months of August, September, and October. The Atlantic hurricane season is really extremely peaked.
So you talked about the seasonal forecast for this fall. How do scientists make these hurricane projections for a season?
Yeah, so our group at Colorado State, we were the first ones to do these seasonal hurricane forecasts. So it started with my mentor, Dr. Bill Gray, all the way back in 1984. And really the way these seasonal forecasts got started was, you know, effectively, Dr. Gray was kind of like Wikipedia before we had Wikipedia. So back in the Encyclopedia Britannica days, so Dr. Gray was teaching tropical meteorology, and he knew which years in the past had El Nino conditions, and he knew which years in the past were busy hurricane seasons. And he said, well, when we have El Nino in the tropical Pacific Ocean, we tend to get fewer hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean. And that made him scratch his head. Why would something going on in the Pacific Ocean impact hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean thousands of miles away? So El Nino is warmer than normal waters in the central and eastern tropical Pacific Ocean. And when you have those El Nino conditions, through work that he and other colleagues did, discovered that when you have those warmer waters in the eastern and central tropical Pacific, it tends to shift where those thunderstorms form in the Pacific Ocean. And basically, what happens when you shift those thunderstorms from, say, near Indonesia more towards the Central Pacific, where the waters are really warm and in El Nino, what it tends to do is increase winds high up in the atmosphere, say 20 to 30,000 feet, that basically increases what we call levels of vertical wind shear. Vertical wind shear is a change in wind speed and direction with height in the atmosphere. Too much vertical wind shear is detrimental for hurricane formation and intensification. So when you have El Nino, that's good for us, bad for the hurricanes. Basically, too much shear, it tears apart the storms. Alternatively, when we have La Nina, which is the opposite of El Nino, you tend to have lower levels of vertical wind shear, which is good for hurricanes, but bad for us. We use a lot of other predictors as well. One of the other predictors that's very important is what are the water temperatures like in the tropical Atlantic? When those waters are running warmer than normal, basically hurricanes live off of that warm ocean water. So more of that warm ocean water provides more fuel for hurricanes. It also tends to be associated with a more unstable atmosphere that also favors Atlantic hurricane activity. We use a lot of other predictors as well, but those are two of our primary predictors that we use for forecasting hurricane seasons. And so really the way that we do these seasonal forecasts is effectively by looking at historical weather and climate patterns and then relating, kind of looking for these precursor signals. So what sets of climate conditions historically precede busy seasons versus quiet seasons?
Just want to take a quick moment. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, and we're talking with Phil Klotzbach, research scientist in the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University, about the upcoming hurricane season.
Can you give a summary? I mean, hurricanes are really complex beasts, right? So there's it's not as necessarily as easy as saying that they're going to become more storms and bigger storms and everything's going to, but can you give us a good summary of how historically hurricanes have changed over the last century or so in the Atlantic, and maybe some future projections of how we expect them to change into the future?
Yeah, so there's been some very interesting trends over the last 30 to 40 years. And you know, a lot of these trends, what we look at trends, we look at trends in the Atlantic, but we also look at trends globally. So, you know, we have hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean. We also have hurricanes in the Eastern Pacific Ocean off the west coast of Mexico. We have typhoons in the Western North Pacific. They're basically the same as hurricanes, just called by a different name. We get cyclones, which are the same as hurricanes, in the Indian Ocean, in the North Indian Ocean, and in the South Indian Ocean and South Pacific. We also get tropical cyclones, which are again the same thing. They just spin the opposite direction in the other hemisphere. And so, you know, when we look at these storms globally, and we have pretty good data globally going back to around 1990, that's when we have pretty good global satellite coverage. So we have pretty accurate data for what was going on out in the oceans. And we look at storms globally since 1990. If we look at, say, hurricane strength storms, we actually see a significant decreasing trend, which is, I think, a surprise to a lot of people. And a lot of the reason we think that's the case is because we're actually trending more towards La Nina. And if you remember what we talked about just a few minutes ago, when we have La Nina conditions, that is colder water in the eastern and central tropical Pacific Ocean. That lowers vertical wind shear in the Atlantic, so it favors Atlantic storms, and Atlantic hurricanes tend to get more. But we tend to actually, the water's a little bit colder in the Pacific Ocean. You tend to get more shear in certain parts of the basin. It tends to kind of shift where that monsoon trough is in the western North Pacific, where you get a lot of the storms in the western North Pacific further to the north. So they tend to not get as strong. So overall, this trend towards La Nina increases your Atlantic storms, but knocks down your Pacific storms. And since the Pacific Ocean is a much larger ocean than is the Atlantic, you tend to have a lot more warm water there. Basically, if you can really knock down the Pacific Ocean, you'll knock down the global number of hurricanes. Now, if we look at some of these other quantities, we can say, look at the number of hurricanes that reach these high-end intensities. So, say, category 4 and 5 storms, so winds about 130 miles per hour or more. We do see a significant increasing, basically, percentage of hurricanes reaching these high-intensity thresholds. And I think that makes sense when you have the warmer ocean waters. That basically does provide more fuel. And there's a lot of other stuff that is important to get a hurricane to reach category 4 or 5, including you need to have low levels of that vertical wind shear. You need to have a plenty of mid-level moisture as well, so that you can get the really strong thunderstorms. But overall, those warmer waters will tend to kind of load the dice towards any hurricane that forms reaching these higher intensity thresholds. One of the other things that we look a lot at is rapid intensification. So that's a storm that intensifies really quickly, as you might expect. So the typical definition that is used is a storm intensifying by 35 miles per hour in a day or more. So if we think about, say, a weak tropical storm has 40 mile per hour winds, and say the next day it's a Category 1 hurricane with 75 mile per hour winds, we say it's a storm rapidly intensified. If we look at long-term trends in rapid intensification, we don't see much of a trend with, say, 35 miles per hour or more storms. But if we say look for storms intensifying really quickly, say 60 miles per hour or more in a day, we do see a significant increasing trend in that quantity. And that's again likely due to the fact that the waters are warmer. Again, for rapid intensification, you need a lot more than just warm oceans, but it will tend to kind of load the dice that direction. Really, kind of, I think where we really see more of the trends and more, I think some of the areas that we're more confident in and say how storms themselves are changing is some of more of what we call these tertiary impacts. So we know with warming oceans, sea levels are rising. And while, me living in Colorado, 5,000 feet, what does it matter if the sea levels rise 6 inches or a foot? But that's a big deal and a big problem when you have the storm surge come in with a hurricane, so that wind-driven increase in water level. When you have that storm surge and you say add 6 inches to a foot of sea level rise, that can really exacerbate flooding coming from these hurricanes. In addition, a warmer atmosphere that we get with climate change can basically just hold more moisture and can likely yield more rainfall. So I think these are the areas we actually have a little bit more confidence in how that's going to change and how it already has changed. Whereas some of the storm characteristics, really kind of hinge on most climate models project a more El Nino-like future, while the real world has been trending more towards La Nina. And so there's a lot of discussion as to is that trend towards La Nina going to continue? If it does, how much longer? Those are kind of big questions that we need to address to kind of understand exactly how, say, the number of storms and maybe the intensity of storms may change in the future.
Would that translate to a shorter lead time in terms of if it was a hurricane that was going to make landfall?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So obviously, that can be a big concern as well. So, if a storm rapidly intensifies out in the middle of the ocean, it can be a problem, say, for shipping. But if it's not going to hit land, it's not really necessarily that huge of a deal. Whereas, obviously, if you have a storm that rapidly intensifies near or up to the point of landfall, that can pose problematic. We are getting a lot better at forecasting rapid intensification, but there still are challenges. One of the probably the best examples is 2023, where we had Hurricane Otis, which was in the eastern North Pacific. It went from a tropical storm to a Category 5 hurricane in about one day, and then slammed into Acapulco. And obviously, that was a devastating storm for that region. And the ability to forecast that kind of intensification rate is still, we still have challenges with that. So we certainly can go back and look at the Atlantic and have lots of recent examples of rapid intensification near or up to the point of landfall. We go back to Hurricane Helene last year, Hurricane Ian in 2022, Hurricane Ida in 2021. There's a lot of these storms, and obviously these can, if you have a storm that's cranking up as it's approaching the coast, once it goes inland, the storm will weaken because it loses its warm ocean fuel source. But if a storm is rapidly intensifying up to the point of landfall, it takes a little bit longer to crank those winds down. So you can get some really significant inland wind. You can get more significant inland wind damage than if a storm, say, making landfall at the same intensity but is weakening upon approach.
Do you think that that way of categorizing hurricanes based off of wind, when we see a significant change in rainfall from these storms, does that make that index a little bit less useful or moving forward for communication of the potential impact? Or is it just something that, meteorologists and scientists have to do a just an even better job about communicating potential rainfall impacts from even a relatively weak storm like, Harvey, for example?
Yeah, in this scenario, we've actually done quite a bit of work in, and I think, the challenge is that I think, especially with the Saffir-Simpson scale, when that category is tied to, say, the storm overall intensity. So if we were to say categorize a storm based off of rain, have a rainfall component, and we said it was a Category 5 because it was a weak tropical storm, it was going to be really slow moving and bring a bunch of rain. I think that would be really challenging at this point because it's so people are so stuck on thinking that it is, related to the wind. So what we propose, as opposed to using wind, because wind is really hard to measure both. It's challenging to measure because we generally kind of know, okay, we know where the strongest, say, winds are in a hurricane. They tend to be in the right kind of the front quadrant of the storm relative to the storm motion. But where a hurricane is this big swath of wind, and trying to measure the exact, know where those exact winds are is a real challenge, whether we're doing it with satellite, whether we're doing it with flying airplanes into the storms. And certainly on land, we know anemometers, which are wind measuring devices, chronically fail in high wind environments. So we advocate categorizing hurricanes by pressure. And the reason is that we measure pressure a lot better, both over water, and especially when we get a storm hurricane on land. Again, these anemometers chronically fail in high wind environments. The sustained winds in a hurricane really weaken very, very quickly once a storm comes on shore due to friction, but the gusts can stay elevated far, much, much farther inland. But pressure we can measure very accurately both with aircraft as well as on land. A barometer doesn't need to be outside to accurately measure the pressure. And the reason we like pressure is because, one, we measure it well, and we can also, that pressure gets at not only the storm kind of the intensity, so this where how strong the winds are, but also the size of the storm. And the reason why that matters is because larger storms are generally going to have a larger area of rain. Doesn't necessarily correlate real well with the intensity of the rain, but it's going to have a larger area of rain because the storm is just bigger, and also going to have a larger area of wind. And also, the size of the storm is closely tied to the amount of storm surge that a storm is going to have. So a larger storm, all else being equal, is going to have a bigger storm surge associated with it. So historically, we look at storms making landfall, and we correlate the damage that those storms caused with wind and with pressure. We get a better relationship with pressure, especially for storms making landfall along the East Coast. Storms making landfall along the East Coast tend to be larger because they've been around longer. They tend to be bigger storms, sprawlier storms. So they may not have super strong winds, but they're going to be very big and going to potentially have a very big storm surge associated with them. And obviously, thankfully, Hurricane Erin did not make U.S. landfall. But you think about Hurricane Erin, when it formed, it was very, very small, tight storm, but it was around for a long time. And so over time, these storms tend to grow in size. So thankfully, again, Erin didn't make landfall, but let's say it was off the North Carolina coast. It was still causing impacts in North Carolina coast, being several hundred miles offshore because the storm was enormous. And I can tell you, I was on top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire, the day Erin was off of the North Carolina coast, that we were nowhere near where the storm was. And if I looked to the south, I could see some cirrus clouds from the outer bands of Hurricane Erin. So it was an absolutely enormous storm. And obviously, had Erin made landfall, it would have had a really big storm surge.
Just want to take a quick moment to say, if you're just tuning in, this is Weather Realness. We are talking with Phil Klotzbach about the upcoming hurricane season and how hurricanes are changing under climate change. And Phil, do we feel the impacts of any of these hurricanes, especially the bigger storms formed in the Atlantic or the Gulf here in Illinois?
Yeah, so I mean, Illinois is a little tough. I mean, you don't necessarily get a ton of impacts in Illinois from tropical cyclones. I was thinking about that with this. Normally I don't, when I'm doing interviews, I'm not talking a lot with folks from Illinois about them. I mean, obviously you can feel, remnant moisture can sometimes get up into the Midwest. I mean, I living in Colorado, I can tell you sometimes our monsoon season, we can get moisture both from Eastern North Pacific hurricane moisture as well as moisture from Atlantic storms. I think from hurricanes, oftentimes what you'll see is obviously if there's a really significant hurricane, say in the Gulf, it can really cause significant spikes in, gas prices. Obviously, if there's issues with crops, flooding and that kind of stuff, that can also exacerbate costs of, goods and services for other things. But not generally, hurricanes aren't a big concern for Illinois.
Yeah, so we're not going to feel weather impacts here necessarily.
Yeah, most likely not. I mean, you can get remnant moisture from tropical cyclones, and we can certainly see, big examples of that. And I think one of the most recent examples of that would say be Hurricane Ida, which made landfall in 2021 down in Louisiana. So if you think a hurricane making landfall in Louisiana, probably it shouldn't be a problem for, say, like New Jersey or New York or Pennsylvania, but its remnant moisture interacted with a frontal system and brought, really catastrophic flooding to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. So you do have to kind of watch what happens to these systems, even though obviously you're not going to get a full-blown hurricane all the way up into Illinois, but the remnant moisture can cause issues, especially if it starts interacting with, fronts that are kind of going through the middle latitudes.
We've been talking about hurricanes with Phil Klotzbach, a research scientist for the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University. which issues the nation's long-term hurricane forecast. Phil, thank you for sharing your insights.
Sure, thank you very much.
And that's all for this week's show. Weather Realness is produced by
Jeff Frame,
Trent Ford,
Steve Nesbitt,
Reginald Hardwick,
and myself, Maddie Stover. If you have a question that you want answered about weather and climate, leave us a message at 217-333-2141. Weather Realness is produced by the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with you again next week.